Good morning. I'll just a little bit of background. I'm actually an environmental consultant, marine biologist. I've been involved in the CREST project for 4 years, if I care to remember, about 4 or 5 years or whatever. Part of my involvement with the CREST project involved exposure to a number of other marine energy technologies, and this is a project that we came up with at the beginning of last year, recognising the Chatwinds had some unique circumstances, as I'll explain later, and some unique opportunities. The Chatham Islands, particularly for the visitors from overseas, are a small group of islands 800-odd kilometres off the east coast of New Zealand. They're the easternmost part of New Zealand. In fact, they're further away from New Zealand than Norfolk Island. They're, in fact, across the dateline, they're in the same longitude, roughly, as Fiji, and then getting close to Tonga. So they're a very isolated island group. Population is about 750 people, depending on how many came in on the plane that day. Electricity demand is pretty small. It's about 2.1 gigawatt hours a year. The key point, though, is that the islands rely on diesel generation, and that results in a very high retail price. The generation price of diesel over there is about 60 to 65 cents a kilowatt. Unit, and there's a high line maintenance cost, so the locals there are paying about 80 cents, or at the moment about 85 cents a kilowatt. They recently installed two wind turbines on the island. I'll talk about them a bit later. The project, the wave generation project, involves an oscillating water column project concept. It's a shore-based facility, and it's based on pretty closely on the island project that WaveGen have set up in Scotland. And the WaveGen plant's been operating for over 9 years now and generating into the grid in Scotland. Our project will involve two 110 kilowatt Wales turbine units, 220 kilowatts capacity. They'll provide about 50% of the generation needed on the island. It's very close to a grid connection. And it'll, because they're synchronous generators, they'll provide grid support for the two asynchronous wind generators that they've put on site. We organised a power purchase agreement with Chatham Islands Electricity and signed that up in September 2009. We lodged consent applications last month, and we understand they're going to be notified in the next week or so. Hopefully that process will be reasonably quick. The project area, or the location, is on the southwest corner of the island. Waitangi is the main township on the island. It's approximately 13 kilometres from the main township site, with a southwesterly aspect. The technology is the oscillating water column technology. Very simply, because I haven't got much time, it takes advantage of the oscillating movement of the water column as waves approach the shore. So as the waves rise up, the waves are collected within a collector which extends off the shore and causes air to push up through an orifice. And as the wave falls, it sucks air back down. So you end up getting air moving in and out of a chamber which drives the turbine, and the particular turbine is called the Wells turbine, so it rotates in the same direction whether the air is going that way or that way. So it's not, strictly speaking, a marine generator in the sense that it's not in the ocean, but it's relying on marine energy for the source of power generation. The site is as shown in this drawing. And as I said before, it's in the southwest corner of the main island of Chatham Island. The Chathams are, as you saw in that satellite view, out there in the Southern Ocean, exposed to a very high energy environment. And the particular site we've got here, we've undertaken some work with Mid Ocean Solutions to have a look at some wave energy estimates for the location. This is the 61 metre site, which I'll refer to later. Near shore, the site falls away to between 10 and 14 metres within about 20 metres off from the shore, so we've got a very steep offshore area which is exposed to the wave column quite nicely. For the purposes of our calculations, we've assumed a wave energy flux of about 30 kilowatts per metre. That's pretty conservative, but that gives us some a conservative estimate in terms of our generation capability. Wave direction and height. Basically, the site has exposed most of the waves. By far, the majority of all the waves come directly from the southwest. There's a slight, a couple of other components in there, but it's this is at the 61 metre site. Extremely high wave heights. The mean wave height there is around about 3 metres, and the 1% wave is near 15. The 2% wave is about 14 metres. So we've got some pretty extreme energy there, and a very strong wave environment to deal with. And that's why the Isla situation is directly applicable. It's a concrete structure. There's nothing in the water. It would be very difficult to have any floating structure out there, because you'd have to be designing them for these massive waves that come through quite regularly. And so we've got a situation that's very, very robust and very simple to operate in an island environment. This is a picture of the shore, in the sense that the structure will be constructed on the shoreline, extending out into the wave area there, and that's facing up to the due southwest, which is over 3,000 kilometres down to Antarctica. So the waves just keep rolling, and they don't stop at that site. The shoreline is reasonably flat. There's a basalt reef that comes out, and that provides a very good foundation for constructing the collector and the station. Concept drawing that we've developed for the site, this has been developed by Gary Teer, who's an experienced marine civil engineer. So we've had some very careful input in terms of the concept development for the project. So we didn't just say, well, we'll just take what's at Isla and put it over here. We've spent a lot of time looking at the local requirements, looking at the local logistics. There's some real issues there in terms of construction and getting equipment over to the island, but the concept basically is to excavate a notch in the reef to directly connect with the deeper water offshore, reasonably close offshore, and have the collector on that reef with the turbines at the shoreward side of it. And that's just another concept drawing, just setting up the project. For those of you who may not be that familiar with the Isla project, these are some photographs of that project up in Scotland. As you say, it's a very low profile site, and one of the issues, as I mentioned later, one of the environmental issues that came up with this was the locals wanted to avoid visual impacts. They wanted something that fitted in with the landscape, and this type of construction lends itself very well to that. To avoiding any effects in that area. We've heard from the previous speaker about some of the issues of hooking your power station up to a grid in a reasonable fashion. We're very fortunate with this site in that there is about 13 kilometre long buried 11 kV cable that went in 4 years ago, and it's got about half a dozen houses attached to it. The generation on the island is over here, so they've got diesel generators that generate through here. The main load is here at Waitangi, which is the main town, and you've got people living along here. There's about half a dozen houses along this very line. The line itself is about 800 metres or so from our site, so what we have to do is install about an 800 odd metre cable from the station to join in with that existing line. And that's a major point in terms of the economics of the whole project. It's quite an expensive project anyway from a civil construction point of view, but the real feature that makes it just about become commercial is the proximity to the power or the underground cable. In terms of environmental effects, as I noted, we lodged our consent applications in March. It's a reasonably small scale operation. It's only 25 metres across the shoreline. That's the scale of it. But we've identified effects, direct effects from construction of the channel, which will be constructed by blasting a notch through the reef to connect with the deep water. I mentioned visual impacts, and that's been raised by the adjacent landowners and others. People don't want to see a blot on the landscape, particularly up there. There has been, in the past, talk about noise from turbine exhaust from some of these OWC projects, and that was addressed particularly in this concept, and we'll be providing noise attenuation in the turbine house design and so on to get around that issue. And then the only other major effect that was noted was the need to avoid affecting farming operations on the adjacent land. Our evaluation was that basically all of these effects will be no more than minor. It's a short-term construction activity and it's a one-off operation. So yes, there'll be disruption to the benthic organisms living in the reef and fish, but basically it'll revert back to its natural state reasonably quickly. There will be recolonisation and so on. There's no ongoing adverse effect. The excavation methodology, I mentioned that it's a 25 metre width of shoreline, which is relatively small in the context of that coast. So we're limiting the area of the effect. We'll be avoiding, the track will be an access track, will be constructed, but we'll be using it, it'll be done so that it doesn't stand out particularly in terms of the site. It's a very isolated site. I've got some photos later on showing that. We'll be using low-profile buildings again to minimise visual disruption and it'll be flat to try and blend with the surrounding landscape. And in terms of noise, there'll be noise attenuation fitted. So we've identified all the potential environmental issues and tried to address them. In terms of visual effects, basically it's going to be constructed on the reef. We can put small embankment around behind it of excavated rock that will come from the channel. Basically, and that's from the paddock right behind it, but from a farfield site, you won't see it. The road is about 800 metres from the site. And you can see the farmland at the back. It's nice sloping farmland, but basically we'll be installing a track through there and it'll be very hard to actually see any particular activity. In terms of our timeline, we're looking at, for this particular project, looking at generating usable power by January 2012. We, as I say, we've organised the power purchase agreement. That was September last year. We lodged the grant from the Marine Energy Deployment Fund in November. And I understand that that's still with the Minister for a decision, so we're waiting to hear about that. Resource consent acquisition, we anticipate at the latest by June this year. We're having discussions, we're still having ongoing discussions with various parties, and that timeline is pretty reasonable for our consent acquisition for the project. We've then got some work to do in terms of more detailed bathymetry work and wave modelling, looking at design completion by the end of this year, assuming we get resource consents and the NZMEDF grant. Then there's construction and delivery, and we're looking again at installation and commissioning January 2012 to March 2012. And all those, the timeline might seem ambitious, but essentially we're looking at using a technology that's already proven. We're looking at using construction techniques that, through the people we've got involved, we're confident that we can do the construction, and it's relatively a small-scale operation. But the beauty of this is that this provides a really good prototype for island communities. And I think we were talking about low-hanging fruit. I think a lot of people at these sort of conferences go on about massive currents and massive wave energies and so on, and look at the low-hanging fruit in terms of the generation revenue side of it. But there's another whole community out there, and these are small island communities relying on diesel prices going through the roof. Mm-hmm. And these are communities that can benefit from these sort of projects. We've been up in the Pacific talking to a range of ministers from various nations. A lot of interest in this sort of concept, but they're all saying, hey, we don't want to be first cab off the rank. You know, put one in, let's see how it works, and then we'll be really interested. And so we're hopeful with this one, with the help of the grant, assuming we are going to be successful, that we'll be able to put in a prototype here, which will actually be really relevant to rolling out through the Pacific. So there we go. I was trying to keep my time. I think I did. Okay.
Yeah, the current generation through diesel, presumably for security of supply, it means the supplier up to presumably 50% of power through wave power on an island community. Would that be correct?
Sorry, I missed that.
That for security of supply, you've got to have backup diesel generation or, in a sense, supplying full energy demands on an island. So presumably, economically, sort of to build a wave power plant, it can only be up to about probably half the energy demand on an island. Would that be a correct assumption? You wouldn't want to supply all the power by wave power, because there will be times you can't.
Oh, no, I think it's essential to have contingency generation, and it's got to be diesel. Some, you know, that fallback reliability. In this particular case, there's quite a good mix between the wind and the wave power and the diesel, but yeah, there'll always be a need for contingency diesel generation.
I'm not sure if I have the number up, but about how much power, or how many kilowatt hours a year we're planning to export?
The generation, we're looking at about 1.1 to 1.2 gigawatt hours a year of generation from the plant. And the total island demand is about 2.1 gigawatt hours a year.
Craig Stevens from NEWA. So you showed some modelling and talking about more modelling. Any observations planned or gone on wave measurements?
Yeah, there is. As part of the project, we will be going in and doing some detailed bathymetry, some side scan bathymetry of the site immediately offshore, and we will be putting in wave monitoring equipment, for a period, for a 6-month period or something, just offshore.
Yeah. Richard Morris.
Yeah, Mac. What type of delay do you foresee happening if the grant that you're waiting for does not happen?
Oh, a permanent delay. The project is simply not going to happen if there is no grant.
Vicki Baganoff, University of Hawaii. I was wondering if you guys had looked at offshore construction options for the oscillating water column.
Not in any detail. As I mentioned earlier, we've got a very energetic wave environment there, and part of our concept was to have something that would be robust, and from the outset we thought we would stay away from putting things in the water as much as possible. And plus, there are other issues there with maintenance. You know, there's only a pretty limited resource on the island. There's one guy that the electricity company uses for their maintenance, and we want something that's going to be simple to maintain. And this particular island, Limpet concept, fits the building.
Sorry, Richard Press, URS. I was just wondering what your projected generation cost or sell cost for electricity would be from that scheme.
The power purchase agreement provides us to sell the electricity into the grid at a price that's comparable with their wind generation, but I won't go into the numbers with you at the moment, other than to say that the total finances of it make the project reasonably economic. If we get the government grant, if we get the NZMEDF grant, there's about a slightly over a 12% return if we get that grant.
Thank you very much, Gary.
Okay, thank you.